This morning when you came in, I hope that you were given one of these, and if you weren't, I would really encourage you to get one when you go out, and I hope that you're able to see one while you're sitting there, because we're going to be using it not only this week, but in the 2 weeks to come. Wanted to give you a tool to be able to use to be able to do this. I want you to notice the beginning of that. It said, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God." Today we're going to work at being peacemakers. How many of you have ever been in a conflict? I'm just curious. Anybody? Oh, okay. Well, you're in the right place. Okay? You've come to the right spot with that. What we want to recognize is that in life, we get in conflict. The issue is, how do we deal with it once we have gotten into conflict, and do we deal with it in a God-honoring way? I want to invite you into a kitchen for a few minutes. Perhaps your kitchen has looked like this.
Hey there.
Hey.
So I'm trying to decide what to do for vacation this year.
Oh yeah?
Yeah. What do you think we should do?
Good question. I was thinking this summer it would be a good idea if we went to visit my parents. We haven't seen them in a while.
No, the problem is that's not a break for me. Yeah, your parents are hard work, especially your mom. I want to relax. I want to go to the beach.
I mean, seriously, if we don't go see them, they can't come see us. They can't travel. It'll be another year before the kids see them.
I get 2 weeks off for vacation. That's it.
I'm aware.
I want to use it to relax. That's it. I want to take it easy. Work's been hard this year. I want to go to the beach. What's the problem?
Yeah, but we went to the beach last year because of the same reason.
Yeah, and we got to relax. We got to take it easy. That's what I'm talking about.
That's not what I meant. And you know that. Yes, the beach was fun. We all had a great time, but my father is not going to be around forever. And I don't want to feel like I missed this opportunity to spend time with him. I don't know why we always have to go through this. I wish you could just think about what I need or what the kids need. And it wasn't just always about you.
Really?
Really.
So I'm selfish. I'm working 60 hours a week, okay? To pay for all these vacations, all this stuff that we do, so you can make all the decisions? Really? Is that how it's gonna work? I'm just some big ATM. I'm gonna throw money all over the place so you can make all the decisions. Yeah, go ahead and call me selfish. That makes a lot of sense. I'm selfish.
I cannot take this anymore. Like, taking care of the house and the kids, like, that's not a real job? You know, and I work part-time. I pull my share. If it's that important to you to have a break, you should take one. Go to the beach. Call your golf buddies. Do whatever you want. And I'll take the kids.
I want to take a family vacation. Family vacation. I want to see my kids. I want to spend time with my kids.
Well,
care about this family as much as you care about your parents. That's what you need to be doing. We're right here. Us.
That is so unfair. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, it is ridiculous.
You know what?
You're right.
You do whatever you want. I'm going to bed.
You do that. I'm going to watch a movie.
Please do not do that.
Good night. I'll see you tomorrow. Good night. Why does it always have to be this hard? Whatever.
It can get hard, can it? Maybe that isn't what you're dealing with. Maybe not exactly. Maybe you're on the playground and there's that kid who's always really pushing and working on you and causing difficulty in your lives. What do you do? We find ourselves in conflict a lot. How do we deal with it? I want to give you a tool to help you with that. Again, I want you to use it this week, but bring it back next week and the next week. And I want you to make it a worksheet, use it, be able to learn it. Look, if you've got this stuff down and you don't need this tool, then you've got all this together. I want to talk to you after the service. If you don't need this help, I wanna hear from you. But I want you to use it, but here's one thing I'd ask that you wouldn't do, and that is to reproduce it. I do so with permission as a Christian conciliator with Peacemaker Ministries. But what I want us to do is to look and say, how do we make a difference? Too often the church is known as a place of conflict. Let's change that. Let's create a very different reputation. I want to put a tool in your hands to help you to do that. And so here we are looking at this. And so we say, first off, go higher, glorify God. How do we do that? Well, what are the causes? Just go ahead and name some of them. What are some of the causes of conflict? What is it?
Money.
What else?
Selfishness.
What?
Chores.
Time. Lots of things, right? Our own opinions, different ideas, poor communication. Many aspects of our culture fuel, they throw gas on the fire of conflict by teaching us stuff like this. You deserve this, tells us. I'm worth it. Watch out for number one. And it just causes the cycle to continue and go. But perhaps God has a different plan. I want to remind you of what your life, what our lives are all about. And we talk about this over and over and over again. We address the issue of what our lives are caught up in, and it's about the glory of God. Life is not first and foremost about me. It is about the glory. It is about God being glorified in us. Notice 1 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 31 there in your handout. So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. So whether you are in conflict or in peace, do it for the glory of God. Whatever you find, have it be about the glory of God. So in other words, what we want to do is start out looking at conflict from a very different perspective. In other words, that conflict is to be able to glorify God. It is an opportunity. Now, when you're facing a conflict, the first thing that pops in your head is, oh, here's a great opportunity. Really? Is that what comes to your mind? Oh, this is a great opportunity. It's not what comes to my mind, but it can be. Here's the deal. Do we believe that God is omnipotent? In other words, he's all-powerful. He can do whatever he wants. We believe that? So isn't it true then that if I'm facing this given conflict, he could have taken me and he could have changed the circumstances and helicoptered me over that conflict, right? He could have helped to avoid it entirely, but he didn't. So that means he's got me doing that and moving into that for some reason, and I can choose to have that thing, whatever it is, glorify him. We find that we are to have a badge that displays our belief. John chapter 13, verse 35, there in your brochure. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples if you love one another. Is this the way everyone knows us in the church? Everyone knows the church as those loving people. That's not true, is it? But it can be. It can be. And that's what we're called to. I wasn't able to fit it in, but John also records for us that Jesus prayed in John chapter 17, verse 23. Here's what he prayed. I in them and you in me, Father, so that they may be brought to complete unity. Then the world will know that you sent me and have loved them even as you have loved me. So love and unity are to be the way in which we display the glory of God and way in which we honor him and show him. So how do we do that? We do so by looking to the interests of others, by honoring one another above ourselves, by showing mercy and reflecting God's love to those around us. That's what we're to do. I want you to notice the diagram there. It's called the slippery slope. It's the slippery slope of conflict. All of us have a tendency when we're coming into some difficulty, we either go left slope, that is, we tend to avoid conflict and say, you know, I'd rather just not pay any attention to that, or we tend to go right slope and immediately go to attack, and not necessarily always negative in the attack, but in other words, as soon as we sense there's tension, we approach, we begin to move into that to try and figure it out. more people are left slope, trying to be avoiders, than there are right slope. But what you need to understand is we all have our tendency, and we don't do that purely. No one who is a left slope person just stays left slope. Let me give you a personal example. I had a secretary at one point, and she got a lot of calls, and it was an increasing amount of calls after work, other times, coming to her at home and dealing not just with details, but a lot of times even it began to be about issues and problems in the church. It was going way beyond what her job was supposed to be as a part-time secretary at the church, and it grew and it grew and grew, and she would talk about it a little bit, but really she was avoiding the real conflict that was going on there, and she was sort of stuffing it, but inside she was thinking, I should be dealing with that stuff, but she didn't really come and address that. And suddenly one day she walked in my office and she let me have it, saying that it was my fault and that I should have dealt with it, and she blew up and she quit her job and they ended up leaving the church. She went very right slope. And that's what we do. It isn't that we stay over here or we stay over here, but what we need to do is recognize what we want to do is stay up in that brown area on the top. On the top of it, we go higher and we go for the glory of God. And one way to do that, for example, a verse I gave you there, is to overlook an offense. And how do we choose to do what Proverbs 19:11 says? It is to one's glory to overlook an offense. Well, we should ask the question, should I, for example? Should I let it go? Not avoiding going for the purpose of just avoiding, but rather, is it a good idea to avoid this? In other words, am I doing it just because I don't like to have to deal with conflict? Or am I not going because I really can let it go? If I can't let it go, then I need to approach it and address it. Or if letting it go will harm that other person, then I can't let it go and I shouldn't let it go. The point is that instead of just addressing it or not addressing it for our own desires, we address it for the good of the relationship and the development and health of the other person instead of just what we want. So living the values that we believe, the glory of God, shows that we really do believe it. And in our closest relationships, we really tell other people and our own family, especially in our own homes, whether we really believe this stuff or not. So instead of asking, how can I win in this argument, we ask, what would please God? How would he be glorified in the midst of it? Now, we all find that we often behave our worst right with our own family members, those we love the most. We'll talk to our family members like we would never talk to someone else. But we'll do it there. C.S. Lewis, I tried to find a quote. I wish I could have read it to you. I'm sure he said it much better than I'll be able to remember it. But he said something to this effect, and that is that it is in the home where we can let down our hair. He said that's a terrible lie and a terrible saying that we have in our English language. In the home is where you can let our hair down. What it really means is saying that when we get into the home, we can be who we really are. And that's a good way to destroy your house. That's a good way to destroy your home. Because if we let our hair down, the expression is saying, if we be who we really are, we bring destruction into our homes. Because in fact, the Bible calls us to be on guard all the time, that I must take every thought captive to the obedience of Christ, because what comes out of my flesh is destruction. But by the power of the Spirit of God in me, I can live life in the midst of that. Nowhere can we let our hair down, not in this life, because we must have the power of Christ in us, or we won't bring life to the situations that we're around. Glorifying God is possible, even in the midst of difficult relationships. How? By staying on the high ground, staying up on the top of that slippery slope. There's a lot there to work on and to learn, that we would glorify God in all that we do. But let's look at the second point also, to get real. Get the plank out of your eye. I know I wrote log there. I forgot that the NIV translates it plank. I learned it as log, and I forget lots of times and just write it with log. But the point is, it's a big thing, and it's stuck in your eye, right? We often, though, are blind to our own contribution of conflict, especially in the heat of conflict. We tend to be blind to it. Please understand that's such an important point. We tend to be blind to our own part, but how do we become aware of our own part? It is, and I want to push you back, to where we go over and over and over again, and that is to get it into our heads that we must believe the gospel. What's the gospel? The gospel is this, that I am more wicked than I ever want to admit. And I am more loved than I can ever comprehend. And when we try to get rid of either one of those, we end up in a mess. I have to recognize that I'm more wicked than I really want to admit. Look at what Jeremiah 17:9 says. The heart is deceitful above all things and beyond cure. Who can understand it? The fact of the matter is, I can. My heart is deceitful. I will miss that I'm a major contributor in this conflict. I'll only see your part in it. So how should I approach a conflict? A very helpful passage I've given you there is Matthew chapter 7, verses 3 to 5. The words of Jesus, by the way. Why do you look at the speck of sawdust in your brother's eye and pay no attention to the plank in your own eye? How can you say to your brother, let me take the speck out of your eye, when all the time there is a plank in your own eye? You hypocrite. First take the plank out of your own eye, and then you will see clearly to remove the speck from your brother's eye. Notice what I say underneath there. Even if you are responsible for 2% of the conflict, you are 100% responsible for that 2%. See, God won't hold you accountable for someone else's mistake or their part in the sin. He'll hold you responsible for your part in it. Now, how many of you, when you immediately come into the conflict, you understand that you've got the plank and they've got the speck? No. What do you know right away as soon as you get into a conflict? Who's got the plank? You do. You have the plank. Let me help you with your plank. But that's not what Jesus says. What Jesus says is, I've got the plank. And we need to work at learning to believe him. And what we find is when we do believe that, it triggers what we call the golden response. You remember what the golden rule is? What is it? Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. So if we do the golden step in owning it ourselves, we'll find that they will own their part as well. Every time? Of course not. There's no guarantees here. But the point is, this is the way Jesus told us to be able to see the golden rule lived out. Remember that we are often blind to this. In order to get the log out, it helps to know where that log comes from, and we move right into the next passage. In James chapter 4, 1 to 3, we read about the progression of an idol. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Okay, so very direct to our question. How in the world? Remember what the husband asked in the video? What did he say? How do we always get here? How does this happen? Do you ever feel that way? Like, I thought we were only talking about, and we suddenly got all the way down to here. What causes fights and quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desires that battle within you? Keyword, desires. You desire, but you do not have, so you kill. Now, please understand, he jumps immediately to what seems like a very far leap, but understand that when the Bible talks about that, it's saying that if you hold anger in your heart, Jesus said, you also have killed that person in your heart. So you have a desire, and you didn't get the desire met, so now you are angry with that other person. You've begun to kill the relationship. You covet, that means you've let that desire now be seated in your heart. It's become very important to you. And you covet, but you cannot get what you want, and so you quarrel and you fight. You do not have because you do not ask God. And when you do ask, you do not receive because you ask with wrong motives that you may spend what you get on your pleasures. In other words, you want what you want, I want what I want, so I can have it, not so God can be glorified. That's called idolatry. And the fact of the matter is, it has been well said that the human heart is an idol factory. We crank them out like that, and we learn to do it at a very young age. Let me demonstrate that. Two kids sitting on the floor. Johnny, he wants a red crayon. That's his desire, right? Is there anything wrong with the desire to want a red crayon? Nothing wrong with the desire. Please understand something. The desire is almost always always a good thing. And we get so fixated on that, we think it's a good thing. Therefore, I justify all this other stuff. It's a crayon. It's a two-year-old. I desire. But then what's he, and so with a desire, what's he say? Can I have the red crayon? He doesn't get, the answer is no. So then what's he say? Give me the red crayon, right? Makes it a demand. And then the answer is no. And then he says, you're mean. You won't give me the red crayon. Now, I know this is all theoretical, right? It never really happens. You're mean. You won't give it to me. And then what's he do next? Talking's done. Now it's punishment. We did this at 2 years old. Who taught us this stuff? I'm more wicked than I ever want to admit. This is the stuff of the flesh, and baby, it'll spin. The progression of idolatry in that diagram is huge, and we go at it all the time. It isn't just kids. We want a song. My song is really a good song. My song really honors God. It's got great words to my song. It's got a great tune to it. That's a good one in the church, right? I desire my song. Would you sing my song? They don't sing my song. Please, I really want you to sing my song. I've made it a demand now. They don't sing my song. You know that worship leader? He's not really that great of a worship leader. I don't know why. You can't see that that's a really great song. And we start telling other people about it. I judge that he's not a good worship leader. And then I punish. I share a prayer request that our spiritual development of our worship leader would get better, and then we really punish when we leave and go to another church because I won't sing my song. We've traded the glory and love for a song. And we do it all the time. And we do it to each other. So what do we do? What do we do? Well, we go into confession of sin and we admit, I am more wicked and I am more loved. And out of that love, then I can say, I'm sorry. But we tend to do this pretty bad. Most of us have never learned how to really say, I'm sorry, how to make an effective apology. So let me help you, and you need to fill in your blanks there in your handout. The seven A's of confession. I get it. It seems rudimentary. It seems too, forced kind of a thing. But remember when you learned any new thing, like riding a bicycle? The first time you got on that bike, did you just get on and go and pedal just like that? No, you had to be taught how to do this and how to do that and how to do the other thing. Whatever it is that you've learned, it felt clunky at first, and so can this. But let me tell you, it'll make a big difference when you sin against someone if you'll really confess first. A is address everyone involved. If it's between you and one other person, that's to whom you must confess. But next, avoid if, but, and maybe. If I say, I'm sorry, but what am I really doing? I'm making an excuse, aren't I? If I say, I'm sorry, but I'm going to go on to say, if you wouldn't have done this, I'm making an excuse for my bad behavior. Next is to admit specifically, this is what I've done. And then after that, to say, I acknowledge that that hurt you. That as a matter of fact, when I say things like, remember in the video, did you catch the key words? You always, you never. Those are cutting words. And we go right to the heart. If you cared as much about, admit specifically, acknowledge the hurt, that I took things that I knew would hurt you, and I went for those. And I tried to hurt you. And there's no excuse for doing that. And I accept the consequences. That is, you might need some space for a while, and I get it. And I'll be patient, and I'll wait, and I'll say it again if I need to, that I've hurt you, and I'm sorry. And I'm going to work to let it go. Come back when you're ready to engage. Alter your behavior. Say, you know, I just had to confess this a week ago that I blew up at you, but I really want to change. I want to do it different. I'm going to alter my behavior, and I'm going to try to never do it again. If I do it again, I'm sorry, but I hope it's 10 days next time. And then ask for forgiveness. It makes a dramatic difference. Let me tell you about some bad examples. Look, I'm sorry, okay? Ever say that? What is the okay really saying? Like, you know, What's wrong with you? Why can't you get over this stuff? Another one is to say, well, I'm really sorry, but, you know, I didn't realize you were so sensitive. In other words, if you had your big boy pants on, we wouldn't be having to have this conversation. It's just because you're too sensitive. And here's an actual one. I know that I really had to look hard to find one by a politician that was bad. A politician called his opponent an unusually good liar, but he decided to apologize, so here's what he said. It was an unfortunate remark that once it's in print, it looks a lot worse than it actually is. Oh, I feel better now! Don and I had the opportunity last week to go to a leadership conference that was video recorded, and we got to hear a guy named Danny Meyer, who's a restaurateur. He owns some very fancy restaurants in New York, in New York City. There was an opening of some Italian dressmakers, a new line of stuff that was coming out, obviously a whole different world than I ever am interested in or understand or know. But these guys wanted to come to his restaurant to be able to have the party after the opening of this big show. There were some pretty fancy outfits at that dinner. They came to the dinner. It was, long story short, there was some oil spilled on the back of one of the ladies' gowns that was a brand new gown. He immediately spoke to his manager. He was actually at the dinner. Spoke to him and said, please call the, and he said the designer and the gown manufacturer, which went over my head, and say, call and see if there's another gown to replace the gown. Found out there was. It was 4 times the ticket price of the whole meal that night. Said, see if it's available and if they can get it to the apartment tonight. And they said they would. He had it delivered to that lady's apartment that night. The next morning, he went into the restaurant and he put together a gift basket of all the nicest things that they produce out of the restaurant and a personally written note apologizing again for what took place. And then he put in a $500 gift certificate to the restaurant into the thing. And he said, this is the way we run our businesses. I don't have any idea if this guy's a Christian or not, but here's what he said. When you make a mistake, apologize for it and then fix it. And that apply excessive generosity, thus writing a great next chapter from the mistake. I want you to think about what he just said. This is a businessman who, as far as I know, is doing it really just for business and to make money. I don't know if it has a Christian value in it whatsoever or not. I'm not judging that. The point is, for business, he is saying, and about making money, first, apologize. Second, fix it. And then apply excessive generosity, then thus writing the next great chapter from the mistake. See, that woman's going to say, yeah, they spilt on me, but then do you know what went on? And that story is going to get spoken about so that the mistake becomes a great next chapter. If he would do that for his restaurants, would we not do that kind of thing for the glory of God? We're going to make mistakes. But can we write the next great chapter by the means by which we apply generosity of our confession to be able to say that we owned it and take that on? You see, without real heart change, it's sort of like putting pearls and lipstick on a pig. You can just talk about the external stuff, but if you don't really get to the heart of the fact that you are responsible here, you're not really getting down to it. You're not addressing the issue, you're just sort of dressing it up. It's still a pig. And the only way you're going to be able to do that, and I'm going to be able to do this, is to be able to depend upon God. Remember these folks? They started listening to this stuff. They studied some of that stuff we just put in your hands. I want you to step back into their kitchen with me and hear the difference it made.
Hey there.
Hey.
So I'm trying to decide what to do for vacation this year.
Oh yeah?
What do you think we should do?
Good question. I was actually thinking that this year we could go see my folks. We haven't seen them in a while. Well, what do you think?
I think we should go to the beach again this year. I want to relax. We had a good time last year. It's fun. If we go see your folks, your mom. The work's been hard this year. This has been just a tough year, and if we go to your parents, I won't be able to relax. I want to go to the beach.
I know, okay? I know it's been a rough year, especially because of work, and I know you need to relax, and if my mom's around, you can't always do that, but you know how sick my dad is. I mean, I really thought this would be the perfect opportunity for our whole family to go and spend some quality time with him while we can.
I know how important it is to see your dad. And I know we don't have much more time with him. All right, well, I wonder if we should do that. Okay, yeah. Yeah, let's do that.
Well, I don't want you to not get the break that you need. I mean, the beach was great for our whole family last year. I just wish you got longer than 2 weeks.
What if you take the kids and you go see your folks? You take them for a week.
No,
hold on. And then the last couple of days, I come up. And then after that, we can take the kids to the beach for a week. I mean, it's kind of choppy, but I think it works.
Yeah, I think it sounds great.
Okay. You get to spend quality time with your dad. We get to take the kids to the beach and relax. And I only have to see your mom for a couple of days. As long as you're good for being away a few weeks, then it's good for everybody.
Yes, I think this sounds like the perfect solution. This is really important to me. I appreciate it. Hey, I'm gonna head up to bed. You coming?
Yeah, I guess so.
Let's pray.